Hey, Galen, remember to record yourself? Remember to record yourself with your phone?
And Galen, can you make sure you turn off the air conditioning, please?
Honestly, watch, after all of the times that I've instructed you guys how to do this, I f***ed up.
Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I am Micah Cohen. We are here switching things up a bit for tonight's Debate Reactions Podcast. More on that in a moment.
Because it's Mardi Gras.
Because it's Mardi Gras.
Isn't it like always some holiday in New Orleans? I feel like I follow certain people from New Orleans on Twitter, and they're always some type of New Orleans
I think those
event.
Are people who have a better lifestyle than we do.
If I could cut in for a second here, I lived in New Orleans for several years. Regularly same holidays as everyone else.
They have more holidays. They have like the French holidays and the American holidays and some other special holidays.
Every place has its own special holidays.
They have more holidays.
There are just 4 days until the South Carolina primary, so let's talk about what went down in the Tuesday debate there and how it might affect the contest. Here with me to do that are Editor-in-Chief Nate Silver. Great intro, Nate. Senior politics writer Claire Malone.
But you didn't say hello. You just name-checked me. You didn't say hello.
Oh, I'm supposed to say, here with me to do that, our editor-in-chief, Nate Silver.
You don't have to, though.
It seems like as a human being.
I'm editor-in-chief, Nate Silver.
It seems like as a human being, you would be able to react in the moment without the hello. Also joining me, senior politics writer Claire Malone. Hello, Claire.
Oh, I wasn't going to say anything, but now I have to.
Now you have to,
Banter.
And joining us from Charleston, South Carolina, is your regular host, who you're probably missing by now, Galen Druk. Galen.
Hey, Micah. How's it going? You got to keep those two under control.
For sake, really? Jeez. Okay, let's start with the big picture. We're coming right out of the debate. Nate, we'll start with you. What is your top line takeaway or top line takeaways?
I want to see the polls. It's kind of a Weasley answer. Look, I...
sure is.
Yeah, it is.
I think that one nice thing about the social media age, you can see the conventional wisdom forming pretty quickly. I think the conventional wisdom is that Joe Biden had a pretty good debate. What I saw with my own eyes, I wouldn't really debate that. I think Biden seemed a lot more comfortable kind of speaking kind of in front of like literally and figuratively an audience that probably is a little bit more in his corner. I do think framing and perceptions kind of matters a lot, right? When you're like the front runner, expectations are up to a certain standard. When you're the falling front runner, as he was like in New Hampshire, there's like almost nothing you can do to arrest that, right? And there had been like a little bit of a Biden comeback narrative brewing. He was kind of, well, he wasn't kind of. He was second in Nevada, a distant second, but second. He is leading most of the South Carolina polls, some by more than others. His national polls have dropped, but seem to have stabilized, right? So I kind of think like it's a performance that maybe objectively is like a 7 out of a 10 that will come across as like a 9 out of a 10 because it comes at the right moment in the media's frame about the race.
Claire, your top line?
Sorry, I got something stuck in my throat.
Somehow that's fitting for
coronavirus.
Jeez.
I'm scared about that. I spent a whole hour today just reading stuff that scared me on the internet about coronavirus. And not from like weird people, from like, you know, Harvard epidemiologists.
I dropped the CDC article in our Slack channel and instructed everyone to wash their hands because
good advice.
538 might be the death of me, but not in that way, you know? So I don't want to die here. Anyway, what did
we all got sick like a month ago. Was that...
We did. It was not coronavirus, though. Okay. So.
I found the debate interesting on a couple levels. One, it was chaotic.
Yeah.
I don't think the moderation was very good.
It wasn't very aggressive, at the very least.
And then the candidates started realizing that maybe that could score them brownie points. So they started talking. It's literally like a sports game. It's like you can kind of blame the refs for stuff.
Yeah.
I was surprised by the number of, maybe not surprised, Bloomberg got a lot of attention for, you know, like harsh questions, both from the moderators and from the other candidates. But we ended up spending a lot of time on Bloomberg. Although Sanders did kind of get his due. I think it was certainly, you know, if I had a top line takeaway, it was like, yes, it was the first debate where it kind of felt like Bernie Sanders is the front runner. And here is a taste of the general election lines of attack that will come on him, right? Which is, can you please defend the position, like, or can you please explain why you have praised certain countries, certain policy areas of certain countries? And I actually wasn't entirely convinced that Sanders had a clean enough answer for that.
Yeah.
In part because I think it was a messy debate and people kind of kept on horning in. But that will be the, you know, essential general election line of attack from the GOP if Sanders becomes the eventual nominee.
It's funny because Sanders has this reputation for being very honest. I think is very honest. I know it's subjective, but like, but he is also evasive sometimes to answers as a regular politician is. And
wait,
was like,
is honesty subjective?
I'm not sure he's honest or especially
okay.
Evasive.
Maybe I'm giving him.
I think he's especially he's repetitive.
He's a
But he did duck a lot of straightforward answers to questions tonight. Maybe that doesn't matter. Lots of effective politicians do find
that,
ways to duck answers.
Galen, the view from South Carolina, it definitely did seem like the first debate in which most of the candidates on stage treated Sanders as the front runner. But did that or anything else stand out to you?
Yeah, so that was clearly the theme going into tonight is how are the other candidates going to attack the clear front runner, Bernie Sanders? But I think the question on everybody's mind in South Carolina was how is Joe Biden going to perform? Can he pull out a win? And if he does, how big is it going to be? Is it going to be a big enough lead that will give him momentum going into Super Tuesday that he can kind of make a comeback and try to challenge Sanders for the nomination? And obviously, as you two mentioned, he did decently well. He also went after Steyer in the beginning of the debate, which seemed a little odd, but is reasonable if you're looking at the polling in South Carolina, because Steyer is doing better than probably most people realize here. He's polling well into the double digits, somewhere between 15 and 20% in certain polls. And so he let everybody else really attack Sanders. He attacked Sanders as well, but other people helped him out on the job. When it came to Steyer, he also really wanted him to take a tumble after tonight's debate. And so, like, what the next few days look like for Joe Biden is get positive media coverage from having a pretty decent debate in which he came off passionate/angry, but at least energetic, then get endorsed by, you know, House Majority Whip Jim Clyburn tomorrow, get another, you know, really positive media cycle out of that, probably gives him enough of a boost in the poll to win in South Carolina. And then the question is really just how big of a lead he will have. I don't, you know, necessarily want to make predictions, but it seems like he's in a position to win. Does that mean much for Super Tuesday is kind of the next question after that.
Yeah, I mean, so at the very least, and again, there is like a big margin of error on how people do, to be honest, like, you know, Amy Klobuchar got this huge boost after New Hampshire. You can go back and listen to our podcast then. And I think we said, oh, she did pretty well, but we don't know if there are any big winners tonight. And she got maybe the biggest boost of any single candidate in any debate. So there's a big margin of error on our subjective views. But I do think at the least, like, Biden did decently. I think it's now almost 100% certain that James Clyburn will endorse him. I don't think he's going to endorse Amy Klobuchar, even though they kind of tried to add suspense by having these, like, you know, two other finalists. You know, Steyer faded down the stretch run in polls of Nevada when he wasn't in the debate. He almost kind of may as well not have been at this debate. So it maybe triggers this like virtuous mini cycle for Biden where he gets 3 or 4 days of well-timed press coverage in a state where there's very little early voting. It's a state where he's ahead in the polls anyway. You know, maybe Bernie Sanders, I don't know. I mean, I mentioned Biden first because like everything else, I'm not totally sure how people are going to react. I'm not sure how people will react to Bernie. I'm not sure how they react to Bloomberg. The other candidates not named Biden, Bernie, or Bloomberg did not have as much of a presence in the debate. I'm not sure if people will maybe
sure
like that
true.
Or not. Well, people would say you're erasing Warren, I guess. But like,
yeah, so Claire, I would be that person.
Who else stood out to you, Claire?
Warren.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Warren has performed very poorly in these contests relative to, you know, we were talking about her as a co-front runner with Biden during this late summer, early autumn. And I think it's not for lack of vibrant debate performances. I think she had another one tonight, right? Yeah. Like, I think she was, she came out of the gate and her first attack was on Sanders, right? She said, we agree about a lot of stuff, but I think I'd be a better president. She brought up the more Mike Bloomberg sexism stuff. She was, to me, you know, visibly... There was like a like almost a rush of adrenaline you could see going through her. Like this was very it's
in the
it
exchanges with Bloomberg
afterwards.
Afterwards, yeah.
I think it's sort of a piece with the debate from last week, where she's really kind of flailing is the wrong word, but it's she's got to attack. Her strategy at this point is just you got to attack anyone and everyone and hope that you know something comes of it. But I'm kind of curious about. And I don't think she'll drop out before Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
But I do think that her, you know, her performances in the debates are both strong, but also to me sort of indicative of this, like, you know, like dying swan kind of thing.
I mean, it did have like a little bit of the Rubio Christie maybe or from last week, the Klobuchar Buttigieg squabbles. I don't know if that term's like. Derogatory to Klobuchar and Buttigieg, but like, you know, where you have like the third and the fourth.
Seems accurate.
It's a word.
The third and the fourth, or the fourth and the fifth, or the third and the sixth most likely nominees kind of squaring off against one another in ways that felt like a little bit of a sideline. I mean, we also should talk a little bit about the crowd. There are conflicting reports about how that crowd was chosen. We have not done the due diligence on it. It seemed like a crowd that was not totally neutral observers. It seemed like that crowd, like the moderate candidates, a lot better.
But those crowds are never neutral.
I know,
observers.
But I think it's actually one of the things that, like, I think it's kind of a weird thing. And if I were Bernie, then I would wonder about that crowd. I mean, he is polling second in South Carolina. There are lots of people who like him there. If you had a randomly selected group of, like, South Carolina voters, clearly you don't. But, like, I'm not sure there should be crowds for these debates, they're going to be that participatory. Because so, it definitely, like, I think colors the impressions that people have at home. It's hard not to react to that, right? I mean, kind of home field advantage, like, literally a thing. And, like, that was a crowd that really seemed to be eager to defend Biden and Bloomberg.
And also to boo Warren. It seemed like at one point the crowd was booing Warren while she was debating Bloomberg over his history with regards to sexist comments in the workplace.
So I want to talk about Bloomberg a little bit more, but let's first talk about Sanders for 1 second. Claire mentioned that Warren came out of the gate making an argument against Sanders. Was she or who was the most effective in trying to take on the front runner in this race?
Good question.
Is that for me?
It's for anybody who has an opinion, or maybe nobody stood out.
I don't know. I kind of thought that ultimately the thing that will probably stick the most are the Biden attacks on Sanders about, I think it was Biden, about praising Cuba.
Yeah. Those came relatively late, though.
I thought the
doesn't that make it better for leaving viewers with an impression?
Oh, maybe if people stuck with it.
I thought some of the gun control stuff.
Yeah,
I disagree with that.
Yeah, we were arguing about this on the live blog.
I just feel like the gun control. Happy to be proved wrong. This is just my initial thoughts. Is that was such a thing in the 2016 primary? And Sanders had the whole answer of like, yeah, I used to vote that way. Now I vote this way. The NRA was a different thing back then. That it feels as if perhaps that is a thing that will move past with the critiques of Sanders, that there will be bigger ones. And that is in fact, a quaint critique of him.
So I kind of want to partly challenge your premise, Micah. Like, I think at this point, every candidate would benefit if Bernie Sanders lost 5 points in the polls.
Yeah. Right?
Some might not love it if Joe Biden wins South Carolina for various reasons. Bloomberg might not love that. But Bloomberg, I think, would still rather take at this point. He won a narrow, murky, ugly Biden win, right? But he'd still rather Bernie Sanders falls 5 points. We even have a conversation about Super Tuesday being interesting. maybe I'm actually being a little bit overstating because Sanders' Super Tuesday polls are good but not great, but anyone would benefit now from the frontrunner falling a bit. So it's more like the kind of collective effort. I thought, so one thing about Bernie is that so far he has been very effective. He's certainly a well above average debater overall with a narrow range, right? It ranges from average to pretty darn good. It's rarely amazing, and it's rarely below average, I think. But he has a different task now. He's eventually has to kind of consolidate different voters that are not traditionally in his base, right? He built up his base from 15% in the summer to 22% before Iowa. I consider that part pretty solid, right? But to get up to 27% where he is now, or 28%, or to get up to 30 or 35 or 40. And by the way, 28 nationally might translate to 21% in the South. And there's a lot of South to come here, right? That requires him to reach out to new voters who may not be averse to his message, but like he hasn't sold them yet, right? And so therefore, like, again, I say it on the show sometimes, like, first in or last in, first out, right? If someone recently converted towards you, then there's no reason like they can't flip right back around to another candidate. And I'm not sure, I'm not sure how well he did with that part of his task. I thought he showed genuine anger at times. I think that's always a risk. I mean, he's kind of Mr. Righteous Indignation. I thought that lapsed into genuine anger at times. And we've seen, like, in the polling we've done, that, like, genuine anger is risky. To take
what?
Two examples, like, risky. Yeah. Maybe let's
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
What?
None of this is genuine.
So, and think about some of these. I'm thinking about the examples that are Ipsos poll where candidates got the worst grades. One of them was Julian Castro in a moment where he was very angry at Biden. Another one was Biden in the New Hampshire debate. It was mean, but like Biden in the New Hampshire debate where he was kind of like screamy and yelling in an uncontrolled way. Klobuchar didn't get great remarks for...
Mean and angry are different things.
I agree.
If I could dispute the premise. Galen, can you weigh in on this? So either individually or as a collective... Do you think the candidates made any headway in trying to slow or take down Sanders? Or conversely, to Nate's point, how did you think Sanders did in trying to, expand his coalition, consolidate support?
I think that two of the instances where the candidates did a pretty good job leveling attacks against Sanders have kind of been mentioned in passing, but more specifically, when they brought up the Mother Emanuel shooting, the white nationalist terrorist attack, and Biden immediately pivoted to Sanders and said that would have never happened had Sanders supported the Brady Bill, was like very personal to South Carolinians, especially considering that 60% of the Democratic electorate in South Carolina is Black. And that church is, steps away from where the debate was. That was a pretty intense attack that I feel like probably resonated with voters, and it was early in the debate. Then the other one was where a couple of his opponents piled on Sanders about Cuba and praising dictators and authoritarians in general. And then he started trying to kind of fight back while other people were speaking. I think, again, it was either Buttigieg or Biden. And in order to try to be heard over them, it was a split screen between somebody leveling attacks against Sanders for supporting dictators and Sanders just like really shouting at the top of his lungs. When it comes to...
Yeah.
And so like neither of those instances, I don't think Sanders came off looking very good, and it was a pretty effective attack. When it comes to more broadly speaking, how Sanders is going to move forward in this race and how the establishment and maybe more moderate candidates are going to attack him or even just parts of the party. I think this is where it all comes out, right? It's now or never. And just to promo this a little bit, I'm down in South Carolina today. I spoke with James Clyburn. We'll have the interview in the feed tomorrow, but he talked a lot about what he sees wrong with Sanders. And I think you're going to hear a lot more of that kind of thing going forward.
So you don't think he's going to endorse Sanders, Galen? Are you breaking an embargo?
I do not think he's going to endorse Sanders.
So let's continue this conversation in just a minute. But first, Galen, I'm going to pass the hosting baton back to you with the podcast sponsors.
Today's podcast is brought to you by ADT Commercial for Business. It's not politics as usual these days, and it's not business as usual at ADT. ADT Commercial serves businesses ranging from mid-sized organizations to large-scale enterprises. Think of them as national security advisors just for your company. They provide comprehensive security, fire, life safety, and risk management solutions. Professional-grade systems for commercial-grade businesses. Voters choose candidates and businesses choose ADT Commercial. The Fortune 1000 trust ADT Commercial for highly complex, scalable, integrated solutions. And if you're looking for a great partner to upgrade or take over the monitoring and service of your current system, ADT Commercial can help to install and maintain large-scale and multi-site business dependably. Businesses choose ADT Commercial for their complex security solutions. Visit ADT.com/538 to learn more. Again, that's ADT.com/538. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Lightstream. If you carry a balance on your credit cards and if those cards come with high interest rates, check out Lightstream. It's easy to lower your interest rate and save with a Lightstream credit card consolidation loan, and you can get a rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are absolutely no fees. And you can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Apply today to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/538. That's lightstream.com/538. Subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/538 for more information.
Okay, and we're back. Claire, you had a question. Not that I'm the host or anything, but, you know, go ahead.
Well, it's more just a thought exercise because in some ways, I don't even know what number debate this is, there have been many. I have watched all of them. I find them both interesting and crushing to my soul. I'm not sure how I've been thinking over, like, is this the best format? This goes back to our original questions of, like, is this the best format? Should Sanders have had, like, more time to explain his probably a little bit, like, nuanced and historical context needing views on Nicaragua in the 80s and all that stuff? Like, maybe the network should do, okay, keep the 2.5 hour time block or whatever, but kind of have it like a 3-on-3 basketball tournament. And you kind of like the games.
Literally.
The games are really short, right?
Yeah.
And it's like we pick pools of people and they have to like go in after each other and you switch it out on the commercial break and you bring in like, you know, kind of like the JV squad in.
Oh, that's interesting.
You add 24 points, whichever candidate's ahead, that becomes a target score.
No.
Okay. Some of our audience will get that.
You know, make it take it style.
Yeah.
And you lighten the moderator's questions a little bit. And it's a little bit more like an actual conversation. I go back to, it should feel more like an actual dinner conversation where people are actually like saying things and leading each other.
Can you imagine it's actually like a dinner party?
I would 100% be for that. Like, let's film the dinner party.
Oh,
like,
wow.
We could brand it as the Last Supper.
ABCnews.com, if you don't want to follow or film our new idea,
wow,
we'll find someone else who does.
Wow.
So all the candidates.
This sounds like a recipe for low ratings.
Are you kidding me? And Andy Cohen would host it, by the way.
Okay, well, then maybe
candidate,
not.
You know,
but put it on Bravo. Which
candidate, you know, sneakily goes off to the bathroom when it's time to help clear the table and do the dishes? Like, whichever kind of helped the most with the dishes, I think.
Who gets too drunk?
Yeah, who does get too drunk?
Okay. But that's a great question.
I have answers
for all of these. I'll take your questions off the air.
Listeners, please send in at 538 politics on Twitter. Let us know who you think would have what role in this hypothetical, for now, candidate dinner. Okay, so I want to focus on a couple more things. First, Bloomberg. Bloomberg had a epic crash and burn first performance in a debate last week. Galen, how was his second showing?
Improved, but still rusty. I don't know. How do you put that on a report card in like elementary school? Showed some effort. Seems like they're starting to get used to going to school, but aren't totally comfortable or proficient in reading, writing, arithmetic.
Galen, that, sounds that like sounded your, from
sounds
experience.
Like your mother will be very worried. Like, that's what that report card sounds like.
Yeah, he knew, he was more prepared. Like, he knew some of the attacks that were coming and kind of had an answer to Warren's attacks on non-disclosure agreements with women who had worked for his company, but still was bumbling at some points. Like, he couldn't remember the word settlement when he was talking about Israel and Palestine, and things that somebody who's been campaigning for a year and a half or more doesn't do, basically.
Yeah, I'm going to halfway answer my own question here, but we were talking about this on the live blog. But when I watch these debates, I try to, like, divorce myself somewhat from the 20 other debates we've watched and all the history. And I've kind of found myself thinking, it seems like Bloomberg, you know, really only recently got into Democratic politics and the Democratic, you know, ideas and issues and priorities. And then, the language that surrounds all those issues and priorities. It seems like he only recently started paying attention to this.
I mean, but I'll push back a little bit here. Don't we want people to actually, like, say what they think? And I mean, as a reporter, hate it when politicians speak in the defined rhetoric of their party at whatever particular moment. It's why I find, like, partisan speeches or you know, I find that shit tiring. So I do feel like I agree that he was not polished and probably should have done more research. But on the other hand, I'm kind of like, who am I to critique a person actually, like, being themselves and not being
totally fair. Mm-hmm. And actually, I'm not even talking about polish, really. I'm talking about, like, Warren had this critique of him that was like, Democratic voters are not going to trust you, Michael Bloomberg, because you haven't earned their trust. Because you 6 years ago, you were giving to Lindsey Graham and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in general, I'm oversimplifying a little bit, Bloomberg's response, you could imagine a response from him that hit hard on the gun research stuff and the time he spent on some of these issues. A lot of his response, though, is just like, we got to beat Trump. Nobody else, everybody here would lose. Yeah.
I mean, this is why, like, this is, again, because I'm bored talking about the debates. But, like I am fascinated by the coverage of debates, including ours, right, which always devolves into, like, well, how should they have done it better? Or how would they have appealed better? And what it all comes down to is, like, well, how would they have, like, you know, buffed over their rough edges and, like, lied to us better.
Yeah.
Like, and that I find, like, the like stunningly empty thing about political reporting is how we are, like, the entire economy of this industry turns into, like, oh, well, how will they give me a worse quote in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Like, after, like, doing this. And I find it, like, when you pull back, I mean, it's obviously what everyone wants. It's what, you know, it's the news. You want to fill people in on what they missed. But, like, ultimately, it's like we've created this culture where it's like, how will they how will they make it a higher sheen talking point for me the next time? And I hate that.
Well, and it's why, like, the, like, as good as the Canada dinner ideas, that ideas like that don't work, because the media has, like, trained these candidates to not answer anything honestly. But I guess, Claire, my pushback on that would be, part of the reason I'm skeptical of Bloomberg is not because he's glossing over the true substance of his candidacy and what he stands for. It's because he isn't. And there just seems like there's a disconnect between what Bloomberg believes and the what he's pushing for and the Democratic Party.
He's pushing for his electability. I mean, yeah, he has no platform truly outside of the fact that, like, I am electable and less offensive to your sensibilities, Democratic electorate, than Trump. I mean, at the end of the day, he doesn't really have a known platform outside of guns. Anti-gun.
Well, but that's why Warren's critique is correct, that, like, there's no particular reason for Democrats to trust him, because he's a guy who talked about running as an independent this year against Bernie Sanders, if Bernie Sanders was the nominee, or Warren, and now all of a sudden is running as a Democrat, right? And has switched parties several times. So, I mean, Warren's critique is correct, like, both as a matter of substance and probably as an empirical view of, like, how voters might view Bloomberg. He also has, like, a little bit of a Zuckerbergian quality to him, right? Yeah. Where, although much less, I mean, he clearly came across as much more natural. And he is someone who was elected mayor of New York for three terms. And so, you know, he's not a terrible politician. He came across as less of a patrician kind of figure this time. But I also wonder if, like, there are some voters who see the ads and this glossy image of him. And they're like, oh, that guy? Okay, he was fine, right? But I'm not sure I like that guy any more than the other four guys and two gals, right?
Yeah. Galen, you were trying to get in?
Yeah. When you talk about a politician who threatens an independent run and doesn't perfectly fit into the party, I think a lot of people would immediately think of Trump's run in 2016. And a key difference, right, is that Trump, first of all, you know, took the time, for better or for worse, spending hours and hours on Fox News, getting acquainted with the party's base and how the party speaks and what the party cares about, which in large part was immigration. And even though he maybe had difficulty, especially at first, talking about how or why he was pro-life or several, many other things in the Republican Party, he was able to speak passionately about immigration. And that's something that just drew voters to him. I don't know what it is that Bloomberg speaks passionately about that is something that's fundamental to Democrats that makes them maybe forget or forgive some of the other things that they may not like.
Gun violence. Anti-gun violence. I actually don't understand why he doesn't play that up all the time
anymore. But
that's the point. Why doesn't he? Because he's not, like, skilled at it.
Yeah.
And I think he feels on the defensive, and I think, like, running for mayor of New York City is different because the electorate tolerates, frankly, a certain level of you being, like, a bit
New York-y.
Yeah, I mean, de Blasio does not have a great interpersonal reputation on some level, right? Like, people are a bit more tolerant of a personality type, shall we say.
Yeah, he also seemed like a little bit of the kind of morning Joe panel syndrome, right? Where he's like making a lot of inside baseball references. He made a joke about his performance in the last debate that I think kind of went over to crickets in the room. He made reference to the naked cowboy, who, in case you're wondering, is neither naked nor a cowboy, but a man who wears a...
He's only a man.
A Speedo.
Tidy whities.
And has a guitar and sings in Times Square. You wouldn't know that unless you're kind of like in the morning Joe bubble, I don't think, or live in New York. Anybody in New York might know that. But you know, those are kind of the cons. I'll put it like this. Bloomberg had the kind of debate that, like, I thought he would have in round one, you know?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
By the way, the Elmos are obviously the new singing cowboy, right?
What are the Elmos?
The Elmos, the Times Square Elmos. Do people not know?
I know about that, and they are naked. The Elmos.
Yeah, I don't think
this is actually isn't funny. They will
what, under the suit?
Grope?
No,
tourists.
The Elmo itself is naked, isn't he?
No.
What?
Oh. Wait, what?
He means Elmo the character.
What?
It is not.
Elmo's not wearing any pants.
Okay.
Clearly, it's getting late.
Yeah, it is getting very late. Okay, so let's wrap up here, I think, going back to, and we touched on a little bit at the top of the show, but kind of the state of the horse race in South Carolina and how we think this may or may not affect it. And I will put on the record that generally our approach to this question is just, hey, we're going to wait for the polls.
Should we let Nate say it?
The primary's in 3 days. So, like, you know, I think listeners can know, hey, guys, we're just going to wait. In general, we prefer to just wait for the polls. We're going to give you our flawed but informed opinions right now. So let's, Nate, can you just start with give us like the 30-second, here's the state of the race in South Carolina, but also, like, given the conversation about our lack of polling, kind of how firm that picture is or how clear it is.
So we had Biden as about a 2-to-1 favorite in South Carolina heading into tonight. He actually has like a 7 or 8 point lead in the polls, which isn't nothing. And the model assumes there's uncertainty between now and then, partly because of the debate. So removing some uncertainty would actually make it more confident in Biden. But, you know, Biden is going to get, we assume, this Jim Clyburn endorsement maybe by the time you're listening to this tomorrow morning. I don't think he's going to be hurt by the debate. And so, yeah, I mean, from a basic standpoint, like I said, I'm just kind of repeating myself here. Since on the blog, since on top of the show, I think it was helpful to Biden. I think because, like, relative to South Carolina, like, even an average performance would be helpful to Biden to kind of stay on track.
He didn't need to hit a home run.
Okay. I don't know whether he hit a home run or not, right? Yeah. That's TBD. I think he had a base hit, at least.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Sports
kill
metaphor.
This, kill this
clears
metaphor.
Out. Okay.
I actually had a – well, I
yeah.
– no, I – no, I don't have anything.
Different sports metaphor? You had the basketball metaphor.
That's what I was going to say, and I was like, don't enter into this fray, Claire.
Need a first down, pull, and boy, did he get one.
Pull back.
Galen, Galen, you're in South Carolina. What's the vibe on the ground there? No,
well,
Galen.
I saw a political lawn sign.
How many times?
I like the vibe on the ground question.
No, yeah, do it.
Galen, how many times have you had to explain to people that you really have celiac?
I think you just outed me for the first Galen. Time as having celiac.
I'm sorry. We can cut that.
Galen, what the is the vibe on the ground there?
So the vibe on the ground, similar to the debate stage tonight, based on our conversation, is that Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg are going nowhere fast in South Carolina. And the main competition that Biden has for a more moderate vote would seem to be maybe Tom Steyer, although I don't know how you would categorize his platform. And given that South Carolina is, as far as states' Democratic electorates go, relatively conservative, relatively moderate, frankly, pretty religious, I see that as a good sign for Biden that we haven't talked about Buttigieg or Klobuchar at all, given that they're the moderate alternatives in some sense. Yeah, I mean, people that I've spoken to all day today are in the tank for one person or another, so that's not a real representation of the vibe on the ground, but, you know, I'll spend a little more time out with real people, and I would imagine that what they have to say is, oh, there's still too many people running, this is all confusing, but, you know, I'm probably going to vote for whoever my friend's going to vote for if they've told me.
The one thing that makes me really nervous about sort of, like, trying to get a handle on the race is... if you look at our polling average in South Carolina, Sanders has been climbing pretty steeply. Now, Biden jumped up to it because of a recent poll. But it just makes me wonder to what extent the polling is a lagging indicator in this case, because essentially pollsters can't churn it out fast enough to keep up with events on the ground.
Well, like what if Biden loses South Carolina?
Yeah. So the poll that has up Biden up the most is the poll that
is the most
post Nevada, actually. That's not great for Sanders. I lost my train of thought.
Then just stop.
No, you're right. But like, the other thing I was going to mention, there are some signs that African-American voters are more likely than white voters to say they're undecideds. And Democratic primaries in 2008 and 2016, the candidates who performed well with African-Americans tended to beat their polls in the South. And so I think that between that and the Clyburn announcement, and there are a lot of undecided African-Americans in these polls that, you know, I mean, we keep using the phrase X's race to lose. We use it about Bernie relative to the overall nomination. It's Biden's state to lose at this point. And let me bring up the other thing, too, which is that, like, we talk about there is variance on both sides here. So 7.5-point lead heading into tonight, 7.8 points, right, for Biden. That means he could certainly lose. Okay. 1 in 3 chance is a pretty darn good shot that you can lose. But it also means there's like a 1 in 3 chance that he wins by 15 points or more. In which case that does have, I think, an extra degree of narrative implications.
That seems like a good note to end on, or as good as any. So let's leave it there. Thank you, Nate.
Thank you, Micah.
Thank you, Claire.
Thanks, Micah.
Thank you, Galen.
Thanks, Micah. Great job.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Micah Cohen. Tony Chow is in the control room. You can get in touch with us by emailing us at podcast@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with questions or comment.
But more importantly, rate and review us. You know, I think we have a lot of new people listening.
That's a very good point.
So I think you should...
leave a 5-star rating.
Take a little time to write us a nice note and then tell your mom to listen to us.
5.38 stars, in fact.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that. But leave us a good review. Tell some friends about us. Send out some like tweets and Instagrams. And
I would
Snapchats
give us 5.38 stars.
The paperless post
was forced to round down to 5.
Yeah, exactly. There's a good review. And if you don't do it, we're going to come after you and make sure you pay. So please save us all some trouble. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon.